You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell. And joining me, as always, is
Mac Lacey. Alex, we are here to talk about Andor, episode 11 of the first season. The last few episodes of Andor, and I'm just going to get right into my opinion of it.
Sure. Let's please do.
Let's just dig in.
That's why people are here.
So the last few episodes set the bar so high that this one did feel like a little bit of a step back. And it was also a setup episode. I really like where the episode is taking things. I feel like it was just kind of like they had a lot to do to get us ready for what I'm sure is going to be an amazing finale.
Oh, yeah. I know, like, the show has earned the trust in terms of, like, I know the finale is going to be incredible and blow our socks off, and I can't wait for it. I agree. I think, you know, One Way Out is a tough act to follow. Like, if you haven't listened to our breakdown of episodes 7 through 10, make sure you check that out. We did that last week, and we talked mainly about episode 10 because it was so good. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think this episode does a ton of setup, yet there was one scene in this episode that I was just like, oh my gosh, this is just so good. Like, I can't believe we're getting this in Star Wars, and it's stuff that we've always hoped for and talked about even on this podcast of what we, you know, envision Star Wars television to be able to do. And yeah. I think the brilliance of this show is in its subtlety. You know, like, most Star Wars stuff is just loud, brash in your face. And, you know, like, I like that. But what's so amazing about this show is just the subtle choices that it makes.
Yeah. It seems to be taking the craft side of storytelling a lot more seriously. Like, it's just being prioritized, you know, above where maybe it is on some other Star Wars productions, just because of what they're trying to accomplish. It's just a different goal. They're talking about nuance within Rebellion and, like, how things are messy and everything. So, you know, I think rightfully so, they're taking a much more careful hand with how they're constructing that story, with the you know, how they're telling that story technically. I think the editing, the direction, all of those things in this show, those are the things that make it feel different for me.
I also think that there is an element about this show, and maybe it comes from the creators, and I mean, it's also got to come from the top too, in terms of there's a patience with the storytelling that I don't think Star Wars has experienced except with maybe the original trilogy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Andor is definitely paced more like A New Hope. Like, if you watch A New Hope, it's a slow movie up until the last, you know, quarter or so.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking time to build out the world, which I think this show is also doing a great job of. They're taking time to kind of, you know, giving you some narrative beats that are not going to be instantaneously gratifying, but that set things up, you know, for a bigger payoff down the road.
Yeah, and I wonder then, like, how season two will work in terms of, because it will be a little more faster paced with, it's got its different arcs, kind of like how season one's been set up, but there's going to be major time gaps between those arcs.
Yeah.
So is it going to be the Empire Strikes Back of Star Wars television?
I mean, one can hope, right?
One can hope. But yeah, so we're going to be breaking down everything that happened in episode 11 of Andor, Daughter of Ferrix. And if you're new to the show, welcome. We are a breakdown show, and we are originally The Mandalorian Watch, and we changed our name to better cover all the live-action television shows. And we've kind of taken a step back this season just because of life circumstances. I had a baby, and Mac moved across the country. So we covered Andor a little differently than what we normally do, but we're excited to announce that we will be back full-time for season 3 of The Mandalorian, coming out probably in February of 2023. So it's just around the corner. We're super excited about that.
Our hiatuses are getting shorter and shorter.
They are. They are. But so make sure you subscribe if you are a new listener, if you enjoy it, and please give us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcast and Spotify. That helps us out so much. And you can follow us on social media at COT Watch on Twitter and Instagram. And you can join our Patreon for extra bonus content, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. We get real weird over there, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it gets strange. It gets a little silly.
Silly.
If I do say so.
So, okay, let's jump into the breakdown of this episode. The writer was Tony Gilroy, who is the showrunner of Andor. And the director was Benjamin Caron. And like you said, I think this was a good setup episode for the finale. I will say, if there's one criticism that I have, and maybe I've just been trained so much by modern day television and it's not really operating on a modern day television mindset with this show, but typically I expect penultimate episodes to end in a huge like cliffhanger of some kind. And this one doesn't really end in a cliffhanger, but like it clearly
it's kind
points,
of an emotional cliffhanger.
Yes. Yeah. It's clearly like, paints where we're going, but it's not like the stakes are necessarily like life or death.
Right. We're not worried about what. Yeah. We're not worried about like what is going to happen to Cassian the second after this episode ended. Yeah. We're worried about what's going to happen in the next few days and like how the events of this episode will inform his future choices. That's where the stakes are coming from. So yeah, that is a little different than kind of what I would expect from the traditional TV roadmap. Yeah. But I'm fine with it. It's good.
I am too. All right, so let's start and we'll kind of cover it by, I kind of group some scenes together just because it's easier to talk about if we do that, especially with Andor. So we begin this episode back on Narkeena 5 in the aftermath of the uprising on the prison. So Narkeena 5 is the prison planet that Cassian found himself on with Andy Serkis, who can't swim. And things aren't going well for old Cassian and Melchi Mac.
No. Dire straits.
It's just bad.
Like the shots of like their torn up feet and stuff. Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, they're really dirty. And not only are they dirty, but like literally I've got a fear of heights. So like when I saw that they were hanging on the side of a mountain like Tom Cruise, I was like, I lost feeling in my own feet. I was like, oh, that would be terrifying because not only, you know, are you doing something scary, but there's something scary flying in the air looking for you.
Yeah.
And Cassian's assuring Melchi several times, hey, they're leaving, they're leaving. He repeats this over and over again as a TIE Reaper circles above them. And if you're not familiar with a TIE Reaper, we saw those before in Rogue One. We also saw them in Jedi Fallen Order. Some of the Inquisitors use those, but we see it flying around. And you can tell the way Cassian is saying they're leaving, like he said it several times and probably didn't mean it, but this time he meant it because Melchi's like, I'm about to let go.
Right. It's like when you're on a hike and the person who knows the trail is like, oh, yeah, just up around the corner, up around that bend. That's I feel like that was good. Like, who knows how long they were on the side of that cliff?
It felt like a long time just when we open up on them. It's terrifying. Like, I would hate every second of that. And you would be the one telling me they're leaving. And I would say, Mac, I'm leaving. See ya. Letting go.
I'm giving up. That's, the endurance, like, competition aspect of it is, it's a very stressful compound situation.
It is. And so later, after they get out of that situation, they spot down below and I don't know if this is just how all rock quarries look in Hollywood or something, but I swear that's the same rock quarry they use in every single thing ever.
I mean, it's quite possible. A lot of, you know, Southern California locations get used over and over and over because they're close by. They, you know, fit the bill.
This planet is not doing well at all. It doesn't like
environmentally.
Look well. Yeah. All of it. Yeah. It's obviously it's poisoned. And we learn that later in the confrontation with the two alien brothers, but the planet is poisoned because of what the Empire is doing, specifically in the prison, which makes me again wonder, what were they actually building in the prisons?
I mean, do you think we'll get a satisfying answer to that? Sorry, I'm yawning.
I don't know if it's going to be satisfying, but I do think we'll get an answer. Does that satisfy you?
I'm satisfied.
I mean, I would hate to think that making desks for the Death Star would ruin a planet like that. So it's probably not a desk.
I don't know, though. I don't think the Empire has any kind of regard for...
They definitely don't have an OSHA.
Yeah, they're not exactly conservationists.
Yeah, they don't care. So they are spying down on these two aliens, but they notice that there's a quad jumper. And if you, in the back of your mind, if you're like, I've seen the back of this ship before, you have.
Force Awakens.
It was in The Force Awakens. It was the ship that like Rey and Finn almost ran into, and then they decided to go into the Millennium Falcon, which was one of the best reveals of all time in movie cinema history. And so they spot...
It was all right.
No, it was the best thing in my entire life. I ascended into another plane of existence. But later they spot that quad jumper and a pair of local Narkinians, I guess we would call these aliens.
That works for me.
They're like frog aliens, right? Is that the vibe you got?
I'd go for toad over frog.
Okay.
I don't know. They're amphibious looking.
It's nice to have aliens in Andor, though. Like,
it is.
Longer for than just a second.
Right, and not just in the background somewhere at a party or whatever. Yeah, I have. That's something I've noticed is just the absence of non-human characters.
Yeah. So a pair of local Narkinians who aren't paying attention... I guess they're trying to fish. Their goal is to steal it, but as they start to run towards it, Melchi's just like, I'm going for it. And Cassian's like, wait a second, I don't know about this. But they're just sprinting towards the quad jumper. Then a spider web like trap shoots out and stops them. I was not expecting that whole sequence there.
The trap is also gross. Like, I can just tell it's slimy. Yeah, it's not good. It doesn't look comfortable.
No.
like visually.
No. It's I think the grossest part about it is that it's like a wet thing. Also,
it looks organic is the problem.
So did they set that up knowing like if anyone ever tries to steal our ship, we're going to catch them in this trap? Is that what happened?
I don't know. I don't think this is the best scene in Andor. Just narratively, the dialogue doesn't. It's not exactly super compelling to me. It
doesn't fit Andor.
Yeah, it was all the Mandalorian. Very just like it for sure fits the Mandalorian. And like that's not a bad thing. They're just two different very things. Different tones.
Yeah.
Like we're not trying to diminish the Mandalorian either. Because it has a different tone.
Right.
I think. My problem with this scene is that it just, they go, we, it seems like a vehicle for us to get the exposition of the Empire is ruining the planet.
Yeah.
And then once, like, Cassian just has to say one time, oh, we're not the Empire. And then they're like, oh, cool, we'll let you go. Oh. And then it's over. And we'll just give you a ride wherever you want. You know?
Yeah, that's
it
nice.
Just seemed very, it just was not compelling to me. It just seemed a little easy.
I mean, the Force works in mysterious ways, Mac.
I guess that's true.
I mean, he's got to get to Ferrix so that there can be an uprising.
Right. So, that's what it felt like to me. It was just like, all right, we got to get him off world somehow. This will do.
Yeah. Two aliens. Now, these aliens, I don't know about you, and somebody pointed this out in the Discord as well. I had the same thought. They reminded me of the trolls in The Hobbit. Just kind of their interaction and like,
or they also remind me of how the trolls act in the Witcher games.
I never played those,
so yeah, they're just like a little bit. They're not like these aliens seemed more intelligent than those trolls, but they're just like kind of I don't know the best word for it.
Simple.
Yeah, yeah. They're upfront in their communication as well. They just say what's exactly on their mind.
And I would say that these aliens do that. They're pretty upset with the Empire for ruining their fishing grounds for whatever they're doing on the planet. And Cassian and Melchi are able to convince the brothers that they're not the Empire. And just when you think that they're about to, like, kill them, they let them go and give them a ride in their quad jumper, which is just like, oh,
okay.
All right. That's
so
nice.
Yeah, not the most compelling scene for me, but it got us from narrative point A to narrative point B.
Yeah.
Like, I would have just preferred them to show up.
Kill stormtroopers or something and take the
ship. No, like, they could just show up.
Just skip that
elsewhere.
Scene.
Yeah. Like, we don't
They just found a ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did the classic, you know, asked to see something on board and then knocked somebody out and took their clothes and then ended up somewhere else.
And then they could do a whole book series on, like, how Cassian and Melchi got off the planet.
It'd be a comic book. Yeah.
It would be a comic book. You're right. It would be a comic book. So let's go back to Ferrix. Back on Ferrix, Marva Andor has died, and we've been building to this.
Yeah.
And some of these scenes, I'm not going to lie, were pretty rough.
Yeah. The scenes with B really moved me. You hate to see, like, a droid experiencing grief and depression. It's very sad.
And you can
sad.
Actually communicate and you understand what he's saying.
Right.
Instead
it's
of
not just
beeps.
Whistles and beeps. Yeah. It's rough.
It's so rough, actually. So, yeah, we've been building to this. On the Discord, they were talking about, like, there were some theories that maybe the Empire killed her or something, but I don't think that's the case. I think she was just getting sick and she died. Obviously, like, even in the first episode or two, they talked about how she's not been turning her heat on and stuff, and she's just not been taking good care of herself, you know? And I'm sure that's going to factor into some of the guilt that Cassian feels maybe later on for not being there to take care of her, even though, like, Brasso and Bix and stuff were there to try to cover up, you know, when he was gone, but, you know, like, it's just not the same without your son there. And so I'm sure that's going to factor into, like, some guilt later on with Cassian. Yeah. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's almost more impactful that I think her death is not directly related to the struggle against the Empire. Yeah. And so the conflict there, like you said, it becomes Cassian's absence, and the conflict is that rebellion and these other circumstances kept him away from that, and he missed out on that part of his life, you know. Kind of like what Luthen was talking about in his really good monologue.
The Daughters of Ferrix are taking care of it, and this is not the first time that they've mentioned the Daughters of Ferrix, but we didn't really talk about it on our last few breakdowns, but kind of sounds like the Daughters of the Revolution to me, right? Like a real world parallel, like this fraternity of women who take care of each other and are all about history and stuff.
Yeah, it just seemed like they're just kind of like stewards of the community a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just the people of Ferrix are like, yeah, these ladies are wise and, like, have always, you know, looked out for us. So we're going to kind of listen to them and entrust some of our, you know, like, spiritual matters and stuff to them, like funeral rites and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and then, like you said before, B2 is just devastated by Marva's death. It was hard to watch. I'm not going to lie. It's like if your pet could talk.
Yeah. If a freshly kicked puppy could tell you how it felt in the moment.
Oh, God.
Which it's just the saddest thing I can think of, right?
It's awful. It was hard. I was really feeling for, especially that scene when you see, like, his eye is kind of like, he's like hiding a little bit and everyone's still talking around him. And then he has to pop up and say something. And you realize what's happening. I was just like, this is so sad. I feel so sad. To me, that shows, like, how good of a job they've done connecting us to this droid.
Yeah.
And making me care about B2, even though, like, we don't really know B2. We don't know if B2 is going to continue on. I did have a theory on one of our Patreon episodes that maybe Cassian takes some insides of B2 and puts him in
K2SO.
K2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
B2, K2.
I could see it. That could be fun. Kind of like Luthen has a droid ship, kind of.
Yeah. You
know? Like the droid AI that's running things for him.
I don't know. We'll
kind of put B into another body. I could see that.
So we learn about a local custom of bricking on Ferrix. So basically their ashes, when you die, are literally mixed in with brick. And they're put somewhere on the planet, like, as a foundation for, like, everybody else. So, like, literally, when you die, your ashes are mixed into the foundation of Ferrix, which is a really cool idea.
Yeah. I'm like, do that to me when I die. I don't know, because it's like a way to feel... I don't know. I've always been intrigued by, like, the things that'll turn you into a tree when you die. Like, use your ashes to grow into a, you know, fertilize a tree or whatever. Any of those kind of your legacy and everything being able to, like, stick around and contribute even after you're gone. That's a powerful idea.
And it's a real, I mean, it's rooted in Star Wars too. Like, that whole idea is so present in Star Wars of, like, crude matter, right? Like, you know, we are much more than this. And so, like, that idea, even though Marva has nothing to do with the Force, there's still that idea present that I really enjoy there.
We kind of got, I don't know, the Daughters of Ferrix don't seem exactly like a purely religious entity, but there's certainly a religious element there. And we also get a look into the Chandrillan religion. So, like, this episode gives us, like, a look into two different religions that are separate from the Force and the Jedi that we didn't know about before.
That's really cool.
I think that's interesting.
That is really interesting. I like that. And we'll talk about the Chandrillan thing, I'm sure, in detail. So we later learn in the episode that there are restrictions on Ferrix for funerals, but Deidre is going to allow it in hopes that it's going to help catch Cassian. So, like, the idea is, okay, let's actually approve this funeral. And if we approve it, then maybe Cassian shows up and we can catch him finally. And we can get to the bottom of who Axis is, who they think. And they didn't get the right answer from Bix, which I was kind of shocked that Bix didn't give it up, even after all that torture.
I wonder if there might be something later down the line that might actually come back to bite us with the ISB. I think
maybe she did give up some information, but not all of it.
Well, maybe they already knew that it was Krieger, or like Krieger was the target, and then she says, no, that's not him. And so they know, like I think they're could be confident things. Enough in their methods that they think they're getting her truthful opinion, you know?
That makes sense.
And so she says no, because that's not who she's been meeting with.
No.
And then it gets, what's his face? Lori?
Lonnie. Lori.
I should really learn that dude's name.
Lonnie.
It's just not sticking for whatever reason.
It's not a very Star Wars name.
It could get him in hot water, though, if he says, like, yeah, that's the guy. They know that he's feeding the ISB false leads.
Interesting.
So I think maybe that could actually come back to bite us later. That was a very small detail, but the fact that we don't know what she said, I think could indicate they're going to do something with it later.
I think we can all agree, though, that Krieger, this rebel guy Krieger, is not making it out of whatever is about to happen.
No one is rooting for him. They're all like, the rebellion wants him dead. The ISB wants him dead. He's done, dude.
And then the holograph of him, when it showed up, it kind of looked like a video game scene a little bit.
he sort of looked like the dude that was standing in for Jabba originally in A New Hope. When they before they added that scene back in with the CGI, he kind of looked like that to me in a way.
Right.
He had like he's a big portly dude with the beard and bandoliers and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's a good point though. Like, I wonder if they're. I don't know if that was on purpose, but yeah, that is a good reminder there.
I haven't done like a side-by-side comparison, so I don't know if they could look completely different. It's just in my mind. But
and I watched this over, 14 hours ago now at this point.
Right.
So who knows? So
yesterday's news, practically.
Pretty much. So yeah, Brasso, which by the way, Brasso still friend of the year.
Oh, everyone would be so lucky as to have a Brasso in their life.
You're my Brasso.
Oh, Alex, you're my Brasso. We should start selling friendship bracelets. You're my Brasso on them.
Yep. Keepthewatch.com. Get your new bracelet.
Bracelets coming soon.
What would Brasso do?
We're going to macrame them.
Brasso's willing to take B2, but B2 doesn't want to leave the house. And like they kind of have this back and forth exchange of like, B2's going to miss the house. Like, he doesn't want to leave. So Brasso agrees to stay one more night there after. By the way, he checks out Andor's room, like Cassian's room, before that whole conversation happens. And I was wondering, was there anything we were supposed to see there? Or, like, was it just a reminder of, like, Brasso remembers who Cassian used to be and, like, is wondering why he's not there?
Yeah, he's concerned about his friend because I think he knows Cassian wouldn't purposefully be gone at this time, you know, and he left in such crazy circumstances, you know. I think it's just concern.
Okay,
that's all I took away from it anyway.
Okay, yeah, I didn't take anything other than that away from it. I just want to make sure, but. Yeah, so B2 and Brasso had this back and forth. And I just love that Brasso's like, yeah, I'll stay one more night. You know, like, he cares about B2 as well. Like, it's hard to tell him no, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell B2 no. So he's going to stay there. We're also reminded in the Ferrix scenes that Senta has been watching Marva's house and so has an ISB agent. And they're both kind of watching actually in the same place and they don't even know. Maybe Senta knows that's an ISB agent, but this ISB agent does not know that Senta is a Rebellion agent.
I mean, one of them is being far more subtle and that's not true. The ISB agent. It's what she's like done and got a job.
And she's
really
new barkeep.
Committed to, she is embedded.
She's really good.
Yeah.
She's really good. So on Coruscant in Luthen's shop, Vel enters and has a very frank conversation with Clea, who sounds like Leia. Don't like that, but whatever.
We still think Vel is Luthen's daughter, right? And that's why they don't get along super well.
I don't know. I feel like we would have had that confirmed at this point, so I'm kind of leaning away from that theory as of now.
I'm still there. Luthen, like, so Vel and Clea have beef, obviously, and it didn't start today, you know.
Now, I did briefly think during this scene, what if they're sisters?
I was almost just thinking,
and Luthen's their dad.
I mean that's definitely possible. I could see that. I was almost thinking Vel is Luthen's daughter, and her and Clea are like the same age ish, and
there's like a weird competition between them.
Yeah, and Luthen has picked Clea to be there in the shop and do, like, running all the communications. It's like maybe trusts her to a larger degree, and that's why Vel and Luthen have such conflict between them, is that Vel's offended that he didn't give like Clea's position to her.
I like that
or something like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at the moment.
Okay.
But
I could buy that. We'll see. I think we'll get answers in terms of if there is a relationship there, they're going to let us know.
Yeah.
And if there's not, then, you know, they'll never make mention of it. But I do feel like Clea is a huge mystery in terms of where does she come from? How does she know all these things? And again, we've talked about this before, but it seems like she's on the same level as Luthen. Like there's a mutual respect there that Luthen doesn't have with others, like you were pointing out.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in some ways she is sort of running the show. Like doing strategic forecasting and stuff. And that's why her and Luthen are kind of getting into it a little bit at the moment. Cause Luthen's kind of going off grid, making moves on his own.
Okay.
I don't know. Like you said, there's just so much we don't know.
Yeah. And I just don't know if we have enough time to address any of that in the finale. Cause it seems
and
like
that's
the
fine.
Yeah, that is totally fine. The finale is going to be more Ferrix based than anything.
For sure. I mean, it'll be the funeral. It'll be an ISB confrontation with Cassian and
an uprising of some sort.
Yeah. I think they're all going to start banging on the sides of buildings and on their
that time grappler is going to be like, I'm going to use my time grapplers not on this thing, but
on
people.
Some heads. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah. So back to Coruscant in the shop. Vel enters, has a very frank conversation with Clea. She updates her about Marva dying. And so whether Vel wants to still kill Cassian like she's been tasked to do is another question that we don't have answered. I'm kind of leaning towards she's not going to do it, neither Cinta, obviously, because, you know, Rogue One happens. But
we know they at least don't succeed if they do try.
I don't think they're even going to try.
No, I think everything... The pieces are moving in such a way that people are realizing they need each other now. Like Luthen's reaching out to Saw.
Yeah.
Mon
we don't
Mothma's...
need Krieger though. We can leave him out of this.
We have firmly decided that we do not need Krieger. that is a established decision.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, Vel also visits with Mon Mothma. We see, like you said earlier, Mon's daughter and her friends really leaning into this old tradition of child marriage, and they're like getting pumped about it. Both Mon Mothma and Vel are obviously concerned by that, of just like, man, they're almost radical in the way that they're talking. It sounds cult-like, but. Yeah. Mac, I feel like we see this play out in the real world too, though. Like, this is on one level teenage rebellion against their parents, right? Like, whatever
For
your
sure.
parents believe, I'm going to believe the opposite thing just to defy you.
Yeah, I think there's definitely that going on. I think, you know, probably just like peer pressure and stuff, because I mean, it's definitely looks like all of her friends are doing this as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think it also just, like, Mon Mothma and even Perrin, we learn, they've kind of, like, lived long enough and had experiences enough to tell that there are some bad things about this particular, like, religion.
And it's interesting, too, that it's, like, more on Coruscant than it is actually Chandrila.
Yeah. Yeah, they say it's, like, it's just, like, it just seems like a weird... I don't know.
It's, I mean, I'll say it. I felt like it was almost like commentary on like radical, like how young people can become radicalized at a very early age. And like, it's like, obviously this is a bad thing, but why is it happening? And it's like that.
Yeah.
You can see the panic even in Mon's face and Vel's face of like, what in the world? Why are we going? Why are they doing this? Why? Like, what is happening here? And like, just this, I don't know.
I think there are parallels in its commentary on kind of just fundamentalism as a concept, maybe. Like, I think, and there's all kinds of different fundamentalism,
sure.
right? There's, you know, religious, political, there's all kinds of stuff.
I mean, Children of the Wild, like the zealot group
right
of the Mandalorian sect is they're fundamentalists
and so I think it's kind of just commentary on how like without the experience that Mon Mothma and Perrin have at this point fundamentalism can kind of take root and then potentially become something worse from there.
Right.
Like children are just susceptible to it.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know my complete thoughts on it, but it was just interesting. Like the further away they were from home, like the actual source of where it actually originated from, it warped even more like closer to Coruscant. Like,
yeah.
Closer to like, and it's interesting because obviously like we've seen Coruscant before in the prequels and it was the shining beacon of the galaxy. It was the place where enlightenment was to happen and the Jedi were and the Republic was and, you know, democracy reigned. And now when we see Coruscant, especially in this series, it's a dead world. It's corrupted. And so everything it touches becomes corrupt, you know, and we're even seeing that here play out. And so it's just interesting. I'm wondering, I guess, what's going to happen in that storyline because they made such an emphasis on it in this particular scene.
Yeah. I like in the prayers and like chants and stuff they were doing, there was a lot of language about like preserving the old ways and like order kind of preserving people. You know, I don't remember all the exact wording and everything, but there was just a lot of stuff in there that sounded more like imperial philosophy.
Yes,
than anything.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
And I think it's just the I think maybe this scene represents how the Empire can co-opt anything and use it as a means of control. All right. We solved it.
Thank you. We got it. You said what I was trying to get out. You got it.
Yeah. I just watched this episode. So like, I haven't had time to, process any of this stuff.
We're doing it live.
So we're just doing it on mic. So hopefully that was enlightening for folks.
That's what I was like circling, but I couldn't hit the target on it. But I think you hit it. They co-opted it.
Yeah.
Like they changed it for their own purposes. And that's like, to me, that's like one of the most evil things you can do. Like you just, it's just creepy and weird. So yeah, I'm interested to see where that storyline goes because Mon Mothma's daughter is not an equation, like a piece. She's not a variable we considered before. And I'm wondering if in season two, you know, especially as we do these time jumps, is Mon Mothma's daughter going to be some sort of antagonist to Mon Mothma?
Yeah. Or,
you know what
or,
I'm saying?
I do, or at least used against her in some way,
right.
Even if it's not like her herself going against her mother. But it could be that. Who knows? It seems like they're definitely setting something like that up. They're being like that scene was super intentional, and it was like an odd place for that to be. You would expect that, like when we're first meeting Mon Mothma's family and stuff, this element would be introduced. If it was
right,
the pacing of it seems weird. So I think you're correct. I think maybe by season two, I also think a lot of Cyril's story is going to be reserved for season two. I think there's going
to
be
coming to an end there for a second when we get there. I was like, oh boy, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Again, I think it goes back to what we said at the beginning of this breakdown episode. There's a patience with Andor that other Star Wars stories have not experienced before in terms of they'll plant that seed and then we might not see the result of it until two more years. You know, like it might be a while before we see, okay, why did we have that whole scene? But that's enough about child marriage. Let's move on. Mon Mothma later talks with Vale about how bad the money problem is. I love this scene for some reason, I guess because they're just sitting and talking and it's raining on Coruscant. I was like, man, I really wish I could be on Coruscant when it rains. That would be incredible. I don't know. I just got lost in that kind of whole environment and they're just talking like, and Mon is, she's being honest with Vale in a way that we haven't seen her totally be honest with anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, she's letting her walls down a little bit. I think that's kind of evidence to how much pressure has accumulated on her shoulders.
Yes.
Like, everything's kind of coming to a head for her right now, and she's just, like,
she's on a verge of a breakdown.
Yeah, she sees in Vel someone who understands this, like, the dissonance she's housing in her mind, you know, yes. And she's just kind of venting.
And you can see,
it
like,
was definitely...
She still has some walls up, but man, she's ready to break them down at any second. Like, please give me a reason to, like, tear these walls down. But like, I don't know, there's just really great acting in this scene of, like, this play on her face of, like, she didn't want to break down, but she also did.
Yeah. She like, had that, like, you didn't know if she was about to, like, giggle or weep kind of expression the whole time, you know?
Yeah. Like, and we've all been there.
I've definitely been there. I'm there all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So she explains to Vel, like, it wasn't bad at first moving the money, but now due to an imperial audit, she's having trouble. And so she's a person stuck in the circumstances that she's in, and she can't find a way out. She kind of feels like she's drowning. And Vel is there just to at least be an ear and maybe put a plan into place to help get some things moving in terms of to help her out. If only she had come across some money recently on Aldani to help her out.
Yeah, I wonder if only like somebody had just robbed an Imperial garrison or something.
Yeah, if only. So let's go to, you mentioned Cyril earlier. Cyril.
Uh-huh.
Back in Cyril's place, Mom wakes him up. He's got a video message from Lionel Mosk, you know, the guy from the first three episodes. He was just the best second dude you could have if you're going to crack some heads.
Yeah. Cracking heads is the number one phrase to describe this guy. That's all he lives for.
That's all he lives for. I mean, even like what he's doing now, I don't know what he's doing exactly.
I need to go back and watch that scene with subtitles on, because I did not get a lot of what he was saying. And neither
did Cyril.
Right. I think they've a specific phenomena in this show is that they use people, like, the means of communication that people are having to rely on to convey the sense of, like, what it feels like living in the galaxy and not knowing what information you can trust, and just, like, grasping at every little thread that you can find, you know, and following it and trying to unravel it and decipher it. And just, like, imagine how confusing gathering information in the galaxy is, you know? And so I like that they use moments like this to convey, like, that Twitter. About just, like, exactly, yeah. Just how hard communication is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, instances like this, instances in, like, the prison where they're having to do sign language and you can never really quite
trust it.
That's just an interesting phenomenon that I've noticed throughout the show.
Can you trust what's being told to you? And I think that is definitely a theme in this episode, especially as we get to the Saw Gerrera stuff.
Yeah.
So Lionel Mosk is contacting him through this video message. His mom alerts him to this, and he begins to have that conversation while his mom is watching in the shadows. And Lionel Mosk tells him about Cassie and his mother dying. So I guess, like, he learned of this somehow, and he wanted to let his former boss know about it. And obviously, this is leading to the realization that Cassian will probably come to the funeral. And so Cyril will be able to go there and directly confront him. And I thought for sure, Mac, in this scene, that Cyril was going to kill his mom, like I had predicted. Because the music turns, and, like, he turns and stares at her. I was like, oh God, here we go. This is it. He's going to, like, just choke her to death before he leaves to go to Ferrix to kill Cassian.
What in the world, Alex?
He's going to kill his mom. I'm telling you right now, this dude is going to kill his mom.
I do see a scenario in which this dude brings a lot of needless pain, but I don't think that makes sense just for...
He's going to kill his mom.
We'll see. I don't know.
If there's one thing that I know I'm right about, it's this.
Mike, you Dave's are so convinced.
He's gonna kill his mom. Why? What? It's gonna happen, I'm telling you. Okay, so anyways, Cyril Karn's going to Ferrix probably in the finale. What do we think that looks like?
A lot of people trying to figure out who everybody is, right? Everyone's going to be kind of disguised. Everybody's going to be incognito, keeping a low profile. There's going to be a whole lot of just like snooping around, but trying not to look like you're snooping around, you know? And then I could see a situation in which Cyril and Deirdre have another like encounter.
Oh, yeah. Weird encounter.
Just because they're all there looking for Andor at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I guess, like, is Cyril going to be back with the Empire? Like, is he going to finally be an Imperial like he obviously wants to be?
I think he's headed for extremism. I think it's... I don't know.
His story is really hard to figure out.
Yeah. It's kind of disjointed, and like for the amount of time we've spent with him, not much has happened.
Where everything has happened, and he's gonna kill his mom. Right.
Yeah, I need more information on Cyril. I still don't really know what's going on. He kind of seems like a parallel for modern day like males who, like, you know, young men who get disenfranchised and kind of lash out because of it, you know?
Yes.
He's gonna kill his mom. I think it's more likely he's gonna be like a mass killer, like
both
or something like that.
I agree. I can
like,
see
I
that.
Hate that, but yeah.
It does seem like that's where his story is heading. But again, I guess it's hard for me to change the perspective that I had at the beginning, where I thought for sure, like by the end of season one, this dude's going to be in the ISB, you know, like,
yeah,
that's just kind of what I predicted for him. And it didn't go that way. And I guess that's maybe something that he predicted for himself, and it's not going that way either. And that's what leads him to be so angry or obsessive. Right. So,
Needs to talk to him, and he needs to talk friends. To somebody. And
besides Uncle Harlow and his mom,
right?
He needs some friends for sure.
He needs to realize how he's the source of a lot of his issues, and he needs to work on himself and improve himself, and stop lashing out at external sources.
You're not wrong. So let's go to Luthen's storyline on Sergo Milo, which is the planet Saw Gerrera and his partisans are currently hiding on. And Luthen visits Saw Gerrera again, and Saw learns that the ISB trap for rebel leader Anton Krieger is going to happen. And Anton can walk into the trap to protect Luthen's source, and the tension between Saw and Luthen is so good in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
And when Saw realizes just how far Luthen's spy network goes, it ratchets it up like another notch of like, oh, you can start to see the paranoia creep in with Saw. Yeah. And it's going to be something that just totally consumes him by the time of Rogue One, right? Like when we see him in Rogue One, he doesn't even trust Jyn anymore.
Right. And I mean, he's not a part of the Rebel Alliance. Like there's been a major split, and we've always understood why that was from Saw's side. He's too extreme. He just wants to, like, he misuses violence and that kind of thing. But then maybe there's some stuff on the Rebel, like what I assume becomes the Rebel Alliance, like Luthen's network and what Mon Mothma's kind of wrapped up in unknowingly to her. I think that becomes the Rebel Alliance, and then you see maybe the distrust that kind of drives Saw away from the rebellion side. A more fleshed out look at those divisions that are starting to form.
Yeah. So Luthen says that, like, in this middle of the conversation that they have, Luthen says that Two Tubes is his source. And Tubes is like, wait, what a second. No, I'm not. This is not true. He's lying. And then Luthen pulls a blaster on Saw and reiterates what is at stake here. And, like, Saw, like, starts to realize, okay, like, Luthen's just trying to get my attention here. So I just love their exchange. And this is what I was talking about earlier with, like, the subtle choices that we have. Like, the Rebellion has not got clean hands. And they mention right. this a lot in Rogue One. And this is what they're talking about. Like, do you let Anton Krieger die to right. protect your source, which could save billions, trillions in the galaxy? Or do you the right thing and support another rebel?
Right. And then your source is shaky too. Like, he just yeah. came to you and said he didn't want to do this anymore. So, like,
it's true.
Everything's a gamble. And it's a nice little situation that we see everybody have to navigate. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to have to make those kind of decisions ever in my life. So,
yeah. So, like, Saw, it's up to Saw, really. Like, right? Like, when Luthen had come to him before, like, hey, do you want in on this plan? Like, we can all kind of coordinate on this. And Saw wasn't really into it. Now it's like, okay, Saw's willing to do it. He can send in the air support, which I'm excited because that means we'll get to see those prototype X-Wings in action.
Mm-hmm. They had sweet paint jobs.
Yeah, black and white. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So we'll get to see that scene, which I assume we're going to see that in the finale.
He's going to go in.
Yeah, he's going to
guns blazing, for sure.
Because yeah. That's what Saab does. Like, whether it's going to screw you over or not, whatever that hurt the Empire, just sure, why not?
Yep.
But I love the choice there of, like, hey, listen, we can do this for the greater rebellion, or we can, like, think small right now and go save Anton.
Yeah.
Krieger, poor, this guy is not... Like, whatever happens, again, this guy's not going to make it out. I don't even think we see him. To be honest.
No, he dies off screen. Yeah. Andor is not afraid of just offing people off screen.
No. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what happens there in the finale. And I think we do get that answer in the finale next week for sure. I don't think that's something that you wait till season two to answer.
No.
It seems like that kind of set up for a big kind of battle.
I mean,
of
that'll
some sort.
Be the climactic yeah. set piece.
Yeah. So then in space, just as Luthen is about to leave, he's intercepted by an Imperial Arrestor cruiser, Cantwell class. Really cool. We were going to see one of these ships in Solo, but it got cut. This is an older design.
Yeah.
And you can tell, you know, like, this is like something that maybe was like version one of an Imperial Star Destroyer before they went with just the triangle shape.
Yeah. They were like, oh, it's going to shoot laser beams out of these big radar dishes. And
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little 2001 A Space Odyssey to it.
For sure. Yeah. But I like it as like a, it seemed like it had jamming equipment and then the tractor beams. Obviously. Yep. So like they gave it kind of in universe reasoning for why it's just like a floating ball of radar dishes.
Yeah. And it's just a great sequence in the Fondor Holcraft. Cool ship, horrible name for a ship. Like, it needs a better name for such an amazing ship. I love the countermeasures. Are really, really cool. The tension is building while the Fondor computer comes up with a new transponder code, which is something we see in the novels all the time.
Yeah.
The different transponder codes, to see it on screen of like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And it was go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I love how, again, this Luthen uses the Empire's arrogance against them. Like, in this scene, they're never expecting that this little ship could, you know, wreak so much havoc on this big old ship that they're like,
dang,
we have you right in our clutches. Like, there's nothing that you can do. They're constantly underestimating. And then that's how the rebellion gets by.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And So it was really, I don't know if you caught this or what you think about this, Mac, but it was interesting. It seems like Alderaan has some sort of special privilege. Like, because like when he threw out the name Alderaan, people were like, oh, wait a second. No. They were a little more hesitant to mess with the ship when he threw that name out. And Luthen knew that. And that's why he said, like, I'm from Alderaan. And so it's like, oh, okay.
To me, it wasn't the fact that it was an Alderaan code. It was the fact that it was the whatever company it was. They were like, oh, they're with the Trade Alliance or whatever. The
Alderaan Trade Alliance. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, it had less to do with being Alderaan specific and more to do with the fact that it was like a corporate interest.
Got it.
Does that make
sense?
Would
make more sense. Yeah, because I was like, but on one hand, I do see maybe where Alderaan gets away with more things and people are so upset by that to eventually it's like, let's just blow them up. Like that will kind of fix that problem, right? Like they're so privileged. Let's just kill them all. And that's what they do. So I don't know, but I think you're right. It's the Trade Alliance. Yeah. So Luthen releases a spray of something that hits those radar shield things.
Scrap. I don't know.
I don't know but what it is, but it's awesome.
It was fun. Yeah.
It releases him from the tractor beam, and then when the TIE fighters come out after him, we see the awesome weaponry, including that awesome double laser beam thing that he has.
It was Gundam.
Oh my gosh, it was very Gundam.
They all have like the laser swords, you know? It was very much like that to me.
Maybe that's why I was like, oh wow, that's amazing. Because I'm a huge Gundam fan. So, it was like, it's like one shot. You can only use this one time. I got the vibe of before you have to like replace it or whatever. But
or at least charge it up for a long time or whatever. But I saw it and I was like, oh, that seems like something that a Gundam would have.
It is something a Gundam would have. Yeah, I love that. So, the Fondor jumps to hyperspace, and now they, even though they have like a different transponder code, they know what type of ship it is. I think that's going to be big later.
Yeah.
Luthen could have been a great asset at the Death Star battle, huh? With that ship and his flying ability, he's pretty good.
Man, just let him do the trench run.
Right?
His onboard AI will just do all the targeting and bullseye the exhaust port.
I mean, sounds like a great plan to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's just further confirmation that he is very well dead and gone by the time of the Battle of Yavin.
Yes. So then towards the end of the episode, back on how would you pronounce this planet? Nymos,
I think, is kind of how he said it.
Let's go.
So you're really into the score from Nymos.
It's amazing. Cassian breaks back into the place he was staying before he was in prison while there's an alien couple just sleeping in there, and he steals the case that he hid. His blaster pistol's in it. We didn't talk about this before, but it's the same blaster as Kyle Katarn from the Dark Forces game, which basically Cassian is based on. Like, he is a canon version of Kyle Katarn, who cannot use the Force or becomes a Jedi, but that's who he is. He's a rebel spy.
Kyle Katarn is really the character that happens when somebody can't pick which of the main characters is their favorite and like what they want to be, so they just like make a character that's all of them. Because he's like Han Solo, he's Luke, he's like,
you're right.
Just like, exactly. Why pick one thing? I'm just gonna be everything.
Yeah, he started off as a rebel spy who became a Jedi.
Why settle?
And I'm pretty sure he's the one like in the old EU who stole the Death Star plans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's him. But he's got the same gun as him. He also briefly opens Nimic's manifesto and it plays a little bit. That's got to come into factor at some point down the line, right? We're going to hear that manifesto like in a voiceover or something. Very much like I imagine in Star Wars Rebels, which is supposed to be co-current with this, Ezra has a speech that is broadcast to the galaxy. I kind of feel like Nimick's manifesto at some point will be broadcast as well to the galaxy, and people will hear his words and be inspired to move because of his words or something.
Yeah, it's basically just like Optimus Prime's speech at the end of the first Transformers movie from basically Michael Bay. Yeah,
same thing. I'm sure that's what Nimick was going for when he wrote his manifest.
That's the main like cinematic touchstone that I feel like people will think about when they think of speeches go out to the galaxy, you know. You got Linkin Park underneath it. Like, come on. What
of doom? Oh my god. Dude, I need you right now to come up with a speech.
No.
For the rebellion. Right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
Who am I, like a...
Go ahead, Mac.
This is a message for the rebels scattered across the galaxy. The flags of the Empire wave in the oppressive wind. Their fires burn across the galaxy. But the fire of rebellion in our hearts will always burn brighter. So just remember, when all hope seems lost, there's always hope. I don't know.
That was actually pretty good. I'm kind of impressed with you right now, just off the cuff. Like, that was not planned. I did not plan that.
I'll tell you what, man. I doubted myself until that music started playing. And that'll get
really
you in the mood
as
to monologue, you know?
Somebody needs to go back to that monologue of Luthen and add that music in.
just put What I've Done by Linkin Park underneath
like,
it.
Time it to the point of where Linkin Park goes, what I've done, and then it cuts to black after he's done talking.
Yeah, and then the credits go. Perfect.
So that's what Nimick's manifesto, that's what's going to happen. That's the season.
I think that's
finale.
Actually like in the audio that starts playing eventually. I think Linkin Park's What I've Done is there.
He's a big fan. Wow. let's wrap this up real quick.
Yeah, we got to go.
We're done. Okay.
Oh, God. I've been on mic too long.
Cassian ends up trying to get a message out to Marva, but then he learns that she is dead and she's passed away. And you can see Cassian trying to like hold it in, not let like any of the emotion out. And Melchi says that, in a Hawaiian shirt, by the way, like Melchi's just straight up wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, he straight up just looks like a dude. Like he shops at the Gap. Like
didn't even change from like dressing room to set. Like he just
he had like a rockabilly haircut going on. Like yeah.
It was Melchi's just a dude.
Yeah.
He's just a guy. He says that they need to split up and let the galaxy know what they were doing on Narkina, and that they have a better chance if they do split up. And then at the end of the episode, we're left to believe that Cassian is going back to Ferrix to attend the funeral. And that is the end of the episode. Now, before we head off here, do you have any like major predictions for the finale of Andor? I've got a good one from our good friend Rick that I'm going to share in just a second.
Yeah. Well, while you work on that, I mean, I think our roadmap is kind of paved for the first time, really. Like, we're going to have the funeral. It's going to be a big climactic confrontation there. I do think probably Saw may rush in and make things too hot for people, you know? He might kind of...
That's not going to happen on Ferrix, right? Like, that's happening on a different... Like, so we'll have, like, co-current... uprisings, rebellions, or something.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. Okay.
I don't know where Anton Krieger is. I can't keep track of that guy.
Yeah, I think maybe we might find out that
He wasn't
the ISB
real.
Has been playing the rebellion through the Krieger thing the whole time. Like again, I think something could come up with what Bix actually answered in her interrogation, you know, and then the information that gives them. I could just see a scenario in which they kind of get the upper hand, and that whole mentality of, oh, they'll, you know, underestimate us. We just kind of fly under the radar. They'll never, their arrogance will, you know, get us out every time. That dynamic gets flipped on its head, and the rebellion has been underestimating the ISB.
Interesting, and
they finally kind of get the upper hand in that regard. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think thematically that would be an interesting place to go into season two from.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think those are my main predictions.
I do think we're gonna see something where B2 maybe sacrifices himself for Cassian.
I'd love that, and then I'd also love if he kind of got to be put into K2.
Yeah, which again, K2 sacrifices himself for Cassian as well in Rogue One, right? Like that's,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like something like that's coming. Now I want to share this is a wonderful theory from Rick Villanueva, our good friend of the podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Cad's Bane Bounty. Now, here it is. It says, I was thinking if Marva died and her ashes were put into a brick, the Daughters of Ferrix could plant some kind of explosive into the brick, kicking off a revolt. Marva could have expressed her wishes knowing that would be the only way she could fight back, right? Because she did have that conversation in episode 7 with Cassian of like, she wants to join the rebellion. She wants to be part of what's happening across the galaxy and fight back against the Empire. I think this is a really good theory.
I like that. Even if just like her brick gets thrown through a window, like
yeah,
symbolically
something.
And something like that. I love that. That's a great theory, Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thematically potent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
I do too. So we'll see what happens in the finale, and we'll be here to talk about it and cover it all with you guys. And so we hope that you enjoyed this episode. Again, be sure to leave us a 5-star review if you did enjoy it on Apple Podcast or Spotify or wherever you're listening. And be sure to join us next week as we cover the very final episode. Before we head out of here, Mac, did you see the news that they're going to be playing the first two episodes on ABC the day before Thanksgiving?
I did see that. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Not enough people are watching this show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this show will resonate with people in a way that maybe some of the other Disney Plus shows would not. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think Andor is a better bet to put in front of a mass audience than like The Mandalorian or something like that.
Yeah. There's less you need to know.
Right. Andor is not like self-referential to anything else. And so I think it's... it's a good bet. It's also just awesome, and I would want to get, if I made something this cool, I would want it to go out on every outlet it could, you know?
What I find very exciting about it is, like, we have an opportunity to all watch it at the same time. Like, anytime Star Wars is on TV, like, I like stopping and watching it because I know that I'm watching it with other Star Wars fans, even if I don't watch all of it. For that little bit, I'm watching it with other Star Wars fans, and I just really like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, like, the collective experience of going to a theater to see a Star Wars movie just cannot, like, be replicated.
Right.
But, yeah, it's a good way to kind of approximate that for TV, you know?
Absolutely. All right. Any final thoughts or words before we head out of here, Mac?
I don't think so. I'm just really excited to see how this season wraps up, and I'm pumped to talk about it with you next week.
Of course. And as always,
keep the watch.